Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
Hello.
It's the Ron Kelly Show.
Hey, yes.
The news you want.
Is the perception still that a black man with a gun is a criminal?
With the topics you need.
Marching might have been good for back in the day, but what kind of effectiveness is marching have on society today?
The Ron Kelly.
Black males 18 to 24 years old have highest homicide offending rate.
4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific. It's the Ron Kelly Show.
So don't get it twisted. Get it twisted.
On blogtalkradio.com.
And good morning, everybody, and welcome on a Martin Luther King weekend. Welcome once again. It's the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates. Glad to have you all here. A little under the weather today, but we're going to make it through here. Just a few minutes. Lamont, good morning, Lamont. How are you?
Hey, Ron, how you doing? Good morning.
You know,
same to you.
Yeah, hanging, you know, trying to get it together here. Let me just hook us up with the rabbi. We'll be talking to him in a few minutes. Rabbi Israel Dresner. We'll be talking to him this morning about his experiences with Dr. King, marching with the freedom fighters. Back in the day, with someone who he actually met, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm going to get us hooked up with him in just a second, Lamont. And I, a little bit later on in the program, after we're done with the rabbi, a little revolting, your favorite subject, the Reverend Al Sharpton. We'll talk a little bit about him. I picked up on something that was rather interesting over the weekend of your favorite subject, Reverend Al Sharpton. We'll talk a little bit about him a little bit later on. Let's get the rabbi.
Hello.
Good morning. Good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Ron Kelly, the Ron Kelly Show. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Rabbi Dresner, how are you? Lamont Gates here as well.
Right.
Yeah, that's Lamont Gates, my co-host here on the program, Rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's great to have you here. First, let me ask you now. I posted some of the pictures that there was one of you who you actually were standing next to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And you marched with the Freedom Fighters, back in the 60s. Now, let me ask you that. Was there any backlash from the powers that be?
I more than marched. I went to jail on four occasions in 1961, 62, 63, and 64. I started in 1961 as a freedom rider about a month after the first freedom ride had occurred. In June of the first freedom ride was in May of 1961, and I was on the first all clergy freedom ride in 1961 in June, and I was arrested in Tallahassee, Florida, the capital of Florida, and that case eventually went to the U.S. Supreme Court. I sat in the Supreme Court several years later and heard the oral argument in the case, which is entitled Dresner, that's my name, Dresner et al., that's Latin for and others, versus Tallahassee. But I was in jail. I first met Dr. King actually the next year, in 1962, in Albany, Georgia. Albany is in the southwestern part of Georgia, about 300 miles south of Atlanta. And Dr. King had asked, that's where the movement was centered in the summer of 1962, and Dr. King had asked activists to come down to Selma to help. And I came down with a buddy of mine who had been arrested with me in the Freedom Ride in 61, a white Methodist minister named Ralph Lord Roy, who's still alive. Most of the people in that first arrest are dead. But the 61 Freedom Ride arrest. But we came down to Albany, Georgia, and that's when I really got to know Dr. King. I first met him when he was in jail, and I was outside. When I got to the town, I was taken by some of the people in the Albany movement. That was the what was called the Negro Freedom Movement at that time. And they took me to the jail where Dr. King was in a cell with the Reverend Ralph Abernathy. Reverend Abernathy was the vice president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, and Dr. King, of course, was the president and founder of the SCLC. And that's where I first shook hands with Dr. King through the bars. I was outside and he was inside. I was a visitor. And he came out of jail. I was bailed out later that day. I think it had been his third time in the jail in Albany. And I really got to know him in the next 4 days when I followed him around like a little puppy dog. And I heard him speak more than 10 times because he would speak at tiny little rural churches. I remember one church had been burned to the ground by the Ku Klux Klan. It was called Mount Hermon Baptist Church. Hermon, it's really a Hebrew word from the Bible. In Hebrew, it's pronounced Hermon, Har Hermon, Mount Hermon in Hebrew. And I remember going to the, Dr. King decided to have a sort of a burial service for this little wooden church that had been burned to the ground by the Klan. It was a hot August day in 1962 in Georgia, southwest Georgia. And I remember when we got there, I was put up front with Dr. King because he'd asked me to deliver the invocation at the service. And he pointed out two people who were dressed in suits and ties and in hats also. In those days, some men wore a thing called a fedora, which was a male hat. And he pointed them out. He said, FBI. And he said they're unfortunately not of any help because the head of the FBI at that time was J. Edgar Hoover, and he was very racist and very anti African American, very anti Dr. King, etc., and very anti the freedom movement. I remember the service started. I delivered the invocation, and then I sat down next to Dr. King up front. And the choir stood up from the this little church. It was it was called a Second Sunday Church. I don't know if people know what that is. It was a church that was too small to have a paid minister, you know, all year round. And so they had an itinerant preacher who every second Sunday of the month came to that church and conducted the service and preached the sermon. He had a first Sunday church. He had a third Sunday church, a fourth Sunday church.
So there were churches
that's how poor it was.
There were churches that held services once a month on the second Sunday or the third Sunday.
No, they tried, I think, to have services on other Sundays, but without a minister. I don't know how it worked. I'm not, I'm Jewish, so, exactly sure how it works in a Protestant, you know, in a Baptist church. But in any event, when I sat down, the choir stood up and sang a hymn, I remember, called John the Baptist Was a Baptist. And I remember I was sitting next to Dr. King, and I leaned over to him and whispered in his ear, no, he wasn't. He was Jewish, like Jesus, you know. And Dr. King sort of chuckled. And when he got up to speak, he said, before I begin my formal remarks, I want to point out that Rabbi Dresner correctly pointed out to me that John the Baptist was Jewish. The Baptist Church wasn't founded until 15 centuries later, 1,500 years later in the Reformation. So
maybe they should have said he was a baptizer rather than a Baptist.
Right.
let me
but that was one of the humorous moments in the civil rights movement, I remember.
Let me ask you, Rabbi. Let me ask you, what compelled you to because many folks stayed back.
I was Jewish. I remember the Holocaust that occurred not that long before. My father lost an enormous chunk of his family in the Holocaust. So Jews are super sensitive to, or Jews should be super sensitive to racism, to bigotry, to hatred, to discrimination, to exclusion, to segregation, etc., etc. And also the teachings of Judaism are very clear. There's one God, and then there's one humanity, and we all began with a common progenitor, so we're all brothers and sisters under the skin.
I'm thinking that there had to be some backlash to, although some folks who may have been.
Well, there was. I mean, not all the members of my congregation. I was the only rabbi in Springfield, New Jersey, in a synagogue. I'm a Reform rabbi called Temple Beth Shaare Shalom. Shaare Shalom means gates of peace. That's the two Hebrew words of, you know, the name of the congregation. And there were people who opposed it in the congregation. They didn't think a rabbi should, even though I was on my vacation at the time, they didn't think that a rabbi should go to jail or wind up in the newspapers and so forth and so on. That wasn't the job of a rabbi. In every group you have those people. There were some African Americans who opposed the freedom movement. The head of the largest Black Baptist church in America, I don't remember his name, but he opposed what Dr. King was doing, and Dr. King eventually resigned from that large federation of Baptist churches and joined a smaller group, I think called the Progressive Baptist or something like that. Just the way Jimmy Carter resigned several years ago from the Southern Baptist Convention and joined a smaller Baptist group that is much more pro-ethical public ethics and so forth in terms of religion, justice and freedom and peace and so forth.
Well, Rabbi, you mentioned, I know the movie Selma is out, and I think you mentioned to me personally that you haven't seen it yet. I wish you did, because then you can tell us how accurate the actual movie was compared to real life.
Strangely enough, I'm going there this afternoon to see it with some friends. But a film is not a document. This is not a documentary film. It's a work of art, and you don't expect it to be exactly accurate in terms of its. It gives the general historical perspective accurately, but not every specific is accurate. That's a work of art. Tolstoy wrote War and Peace. About the war between Tsarist Russia and Napoleonic France. It's not exactly historically accurate, but it's generally accurate in terms of what he describes, and that's what is true of the film. I've read in the newspapers that there's been some criticism of the film because Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was the president at the time and who signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and had a good deal to do with getting it through the Congress in each case in 64 and 1964, 1965, so that. The film doesn't have to be exactly accurate, and I think they probably are a little harsh on Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Now, you mentioned J. Edgar Hoover in the prior conversation we had, and about how he was anti-black, how he was anti-movement, racist. You probably also very well know that he was. Tape recording, secretly wiretapping Dr. King, trying to find a communist movement within his movement. Instead, what he ended up finding was nothing communist of a communist nature. What he ended up finding was extramarital relationships between King and other women. Now, this generation we live in today, you know, this is called the Age of Scandal, and it's said that those recordings are going to be released to the public at some point in the future. Do you feel that the newer generation may only view King in a salacious manner due to these Hoover tapes in the future, rather than the actual message that he tried to put out to people?
Well, that's a very hypothetical question, but I think the modern generation, as was proven during the Clinton years in the White House, is much more understanding of things like that human beings are not perfect, we're not God, and we have our failings and faults. You got to remember that Dr. King was on the road 6 days a week, 52 weeks a year. He was almost never with the family, and I'm sure that there were any number of women who threw themselves at him, so that I think the younger generation will completely understand that kind of thing. Are they going to release all of the I assume that J. Edgar Hoover taped President Kennedy? Are they going to release all of those things also and say President Kennedy was a terrible president because he slept with Marilyn Monroe on one or two occasions, kind of thing, and with other women? Where do you stop? Lyndon Baines Johnson, who I just defended, was notorious for being a womanizer, including when he was in the White House. Representative Helen DeHagen Douglas was his mistress for more than a year, kind of thing. She had been a movie actress who became a congresswoman and eventually ran against Richard Nixon, actually, for the Senate in California in 1950. It was a big Republican year, like this last November, and she was defeated badly by Nixon. But you can go through any number of public people, kind of thing, and find that they were less than perfect. Dr. King loved his wife; she loved him. I knew Coretta, his wife, and wives. I'm sure that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton love each other, and those things occur, unfortunately, in life.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's just that there's a whole image that we've learned from grammar school of Dr. King, and I think a lot of people have not come to that understanding that he was just human, as you stated. And let's hope that the newer generation, this internet generation, and this media, that the new wave media, is forgiving of him and focus more on the civil rights priorities that were of way more importance. Ron?
Yeah, I don't think it'd be a big deal of mine. I didn't know that they were going to do this, but I don't think it'd be a big deal when it, you know, push comes to shove in regards to because most people, I think, will look at it as just another swipe at Dr. Martin Luther King, and I think it'll be soundly rejected if the government in fact does release those tapes, because frankly, there's no point in releasing them. They have no historical value. Who he slept with or whatever the case may have been, that has no historical value. So why do it? You know what I'm saying? Why even do it? There was obfuscated or whatever the word is. They went behind the scenes. They stole this stuff from him. You know, he had no knowledge that he was being taped. And it's just, you know, I don't think that it'll have any impact on the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We reached zero.
I think his greatness is precisely because he was a human being. You know,
right.
to make him into a god is very irreligious, as you know. Christianity would say that, and Judaism would say that, and Islam would say that. Martin Luther King wasn't God. He was a human being. And John F. Kennedy wasn't God. He was a human being, et cetera, et cetera.
Rabbi Israel, when I say that, Rabbi Israel Dresner.
Yes.
We reached a zero barrier, Rabbi. We don't want to hold you any longer than.
Well, I thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be with you. God bless you.
We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. All right, Rabbi Israel Dresner. Take care, Rabbi Israel Dresner. Hi, Rabbi. Temple Beth. Temple Beth Tikva. Did I say right? Yeah, Temple Beth Tikva.
Yes, yes.
Wayne, New Jersey. Rather on the corner from where we are. All right, it's me, you, and Lamont Gates. We'll come back in just a moment with more. Right here's Ron Kelly's show with Lamont Gates. Ooh, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
our 10-year class reunion and don't know where to begin.
Don't let this happen to you. For your next event, wedding, anniversary, class reunion, or just need to promote your business, Burkett Promotions has you covered.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Over 200 custom-made products USA made, along with personalized imprints and logos.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Burkett Promotions does it all. Big or small, we can fit your budget.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Need your event to stand out with that personalized touch? Pens, pencils, t-shirts? Go to BurkettPromotions.com.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Mention the Ron Kelly Show and receive an additional 10% off an already great prize.
Thanks to Burkett Promotions, my event was a success.
BurkettPromotions.com. B-I-R-K-E-T-T Promotions.com.
BurkettPromotions.com.
A business you can trust. A member of the Better Business Bureau, New Jersey. A-plus rating.
Now, back with more.
Are
more,
you ready?
More of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show.
Good morning, everybody. Once again, it's yours truly, Ron Kelly, and the unflappable one, Lamont Gates. Right here is Ron Kelly.
Yes.
Unflappable one, Lamont Gates, on right here with myself on blogtalkradio.com. And you know, what a sickening story, Lamont. And, you know, it brings back to, again, the story of the baby, Pemberton Township, New Jersey. A New Jersey woman who authorities say put her newborn baby in the middle of the road, no less, and set the poor child on fire, was charged Saturday with murder. Burlington County prosecutors said, God, what kind of name is this? Piper Kimberly, hyphen Kimberly, Don Lipdor, Billy Sturr, blah, blah, blah. 22 years old.
The name says it all, yeah.
that would drive me crazy right there. Pemberton Township was 22 years old, was jailed on $500,000 bail. It wasn't known if she had retained a lawyer. Now, police responded to a Friday night call about a fire in the middle of a residential road in the township about 30 miles east of Philadelphia, where officers found the baby in flames and put out the fire. The child reportedly was alive and breathing. At the time, she was flown to a hospital in Philadelphia, said a spokesman for the prosecutor's office. She died about 2 hours later, he said in the news release. An autopsy will be performed to determine the cause of death. Now, this is just heartbreaking, number one, Lamont Gates. Heartbreaking. But, you know, it brings back, again, to something that's been talked about. You and I, you know, both know about this. This is something that's been talked about for years, forced sterilization.
Right, right.
Yeah, this is, we've been discussing this. This is something that's been on the books for years. And, you know, it comes up when one of these situations comes up, and then it dies when a situation dies. And, you know, Lamont, I'm with it. You know, I'm with it. Rather than have somebody have a baby, how did this girl slip through the cracks? Come on.
Well, that's an excellent question you just posed. How someone like this could slip through the cracks, take her baby outside, light it on fire, and as the article stated, calmly try to walk away. She was blocked by other people who lived in the neighborhood, I'm assuming. But, yes, this is a perfect instance where we should have these conversations of whether or not who should be able to have children and who should not be able to have children. What the article, however, does not state is the mental state of this woman. We have no clue. We have no information on why she did it. We have no information on her mental stability, but I could gather, I can probably gather that she had to be mentally unstable to take her child outside and set it on fire like this, because if you really didn't want a child and you were in your right mind, there are many things you could have done. You could have given the child up to social services, as they say. But the idea of sterilization and deciding who can have children and who cannot have children is also controversial in the sense where you always have those libertarians out there, those people who are 100% liberty, 0% common sense, that would say, everybody in this country should have the equal right to have babies no matter how mentally deficient they are. But I disagree with that. If you know someone is stricken of some sort of mental illness where they can hurt themselves or hurt someone else, okay, maybe you should not allow that person to bring something into the world, another life into the world. I mean, we look at social situations purely and say, if you're poor, if you know you're too young, for example, if you're living in a neighborhood where, you know, it's crime-ridden and so on and so forth, why take the chance to have a child and bring it up so that you can raise another quote-unquote criminal? In those particular cases, the people aren't necessarily mentally deficient. They're just irresponsible. So I guess there's got to be a line that we have to draw somewhere. Where do we draw the line if we were to put forth some sort of sterilization? Should it only be for people who have mental deficiencies, or should it also be for people who we deem just can't make the right decisions?
Well, this obviously, excuse me, this is a bad decision. This is a bad decision, Lamont, obviously. By the way, at the end of the story, a gentleman by the name of Dave Joseph said he told the Burlington County Times he saw a young woman get out of her car and light something on fire in the middle of the road. And the woman told him that she was burning dog waste. Dog waste, dog, so that baby was dog waste. You know, when you think about this poor baby, 2 years ago, the baby was, you know, I'm saying how old the baby was, but when you talk about this baby, this infant, newborn, actually it was a newborn baby, yes, they did say that, newborn baby of mine, burning in the middle of the, it's just heart-wrenching, and that baby was burned alive. It's just the most sickening thing you could think of. And I think that if people are sick, if there's something wrong with you, you shouldn't be allowed to have a baby. Straight up. If you guys have mental problems, if you're out there and, you know, you're out there in Planet Reebok, then you should not be able to have a baby. Now, what was the workup with this woman? You know, and she doesn't look crazy. There's a photo.
Yeah.
There's a photo of her on the website, the news, yahoo.com, and she looks like a normal person.
She
needs a little proactive, Lamont, but other than that, you know, go ahead.
when we look at physical appearance, that's the thing. We can't see the mind, you know. Sometimes a person can, a psychopath, for example, is extremely charming a lot of times, very intelligent, and very articulate. Many of them are, but you would never know that they suffer from a psychological disability. Likewise, by looking at this woman's picture, she looks a little roughed up. You can't tell, you know, what's actually going on in her head, but that's exactly the point of, a mental deficiency. You're not going to see it in the appearance. You're going to see it in the behavior. And if we have people like this that are roaming the streets, all right, if we know we're paying disability checks for people with mental dysfunctions, you know, quite possibly maybe these people should be watched a little closer in the sense of, whether or not they're going to bring another child into the world unfortunately, potentially make it suffer like this one. Again, we don't know the whole story behind this. We don't really know her mental state. We don't know if she just snapped because she felt she couldn't pay her bills and feed the baby at the same time. But again, nothing excuses the irrational acts of burning a child alive as she did. And I would rather have sterilized someone like her than allowed her to be pregnant and bring it into the world.
Because she's obviously not of this planet we're living on, because everyone knows that you can drop a baby off at a fire department, a police station, a hospital, and no one's going to ask you any questions. Because they'd rather have you bring the baby in and, you know, alive and unharmed than to find a baby floating down the Hudson River or some other god-awful thing that some of these crazy fools do. And this girl, she should be confined to a medical, mental institution for the balance of her natural life. But yeah, and you're right, Lamont. This is where the law, you know, kind of, you know, this is where the law gets screwed up, Lamont. You know, everybody has the rights. Like you spoke about the libertarians and the right to lifers and et cetera, et cetera. And everybody has a right to have a baby. And everybody does have the right to baby, to have a baby. But everybody has a right to baby who have a baby who's sane. You know?
Right.
So what's the idea, Lamont? So now what do? We go back to, you know, do we interview every pregnant woman? Do we get a psych eval to every pregnant woman or every woman who gets pregnant? Do we require a psych eval before we allow her to have a baby, or is this going to be something that's considered too intrusive?
Well, the process will definitely be a hard one to go through to try to determine who is who. And however, we are giving millions of people out there disability benefits, and a lot of those disability benefits are for mental reasons, such as schizophrenia and so on and so forth. So we could start right there. We could use that as a baseline. But how we're going to go about this process, I'm not sure. But I definitely agree 100% that not everyone should be a parent, and they should be stripped of those rights biologically to even bring something into the world based on the behaviors and potential behaviors that these people are able to put out there. Which are dangerous to societies around them as well. You know, if you're not properly raising a child, that child's going to go out and, you know, probably do things 10 times worse than what the parent was doing.
Yeah, and I can't even imagine, you know, the thought process. Well, there wasn't a thought process, but I can't imagine, you know, Jesus Christ. This young chick, she's about 22 years old, and you bring the baby out into the middle of the world. I mean, this is premeditated murder, Lamont. This isn't, you know. I mean, there is a mental defect element to this, but you know, you had the wherewithal to take the baby. You know, I mean, you were on you had to get from point A to point B to carry out this insane act. So you had an opportunity from the time you picked the baby up to the time you got to that road. You had opportunity to turn around and say no, which you didn't. So this is what the prosecutors are going to be saying. This is premeditated murder one. Plus, she's going to have lawyers, maybe some public defenders or whatever who are going to say that she's insane. But you had malice of forethought when you went from point A to point B. You had an opportunity to change your mind. And just heartbreaking, Lamont. This poor little baby, can you imagine what was going through his mind when he flamed up?
And the article stated that the baby was actually still alive while on fire, and it only died 2 hours later after taken to the hospital. What they would have to argue in court was whether this can be considered premeditated murder, or if they're going to argue insanity. So again, we don't know the full story. We don't know if she was insane. We don't know if that she just had social problems, economic problems to the point where she thought this was the best way to deal with it by burning her baby alive in the middle of the streets. But it is a clear indication that not everyone is fit to be a parent, and if we can figure out a way biologically to stop some of the more reckless people from having children, I'm not against it.
Yeah, because how horrible is that? I mean, it's just revolting. Speaking of revolting, Lamont, there was a big article on the New York Post, front page of New York Post, actually, about your friend and mentor, the Reverend Al Sharpton.
We went from a rabbi to a reverend.
We went from a rabbi to a reverend. Yeah, and there was an article. There's an article on the front page of the New York Post about your good friend, the Reverend Al Sharpton. And what's going on? What the article was about, they were comparing the Reverend Al Sharpton to, they were comparing him to the Patrick Lynch, who's the, you know, who's the head of the New York City Police Officers Union. And they had, they were comparing them to. And and it was so ridiculous. But, you know, they did a poll to see who's most popular between PBA President Pat Lynch and Reverend Al Sharpton. And guess what? Reverend Al Sharpton.
I didn't see this poll. Yeah.
The Reverend Al Sharpton was more popular, Lamont. So no, I'm sure you'll be happy about that. Because Reverend Al Sharpton was more.
Now, did they say why the Reverend Al Sharpton was more popular?
They didn't say, but they took a poll. Who do you like less, Reverend Al Sharpton or PBA President Pat Lynch? And now, Reverend Al Sharpton won the poll, the popularity poll.
If I would have to take a guess, I would say due to the incidences that happened in Ferguson and the Eric Garner case, I would take a guess that many people are still upset with the police department over these particular cases, and they see the Reverend Al Sharpton as someone who marched against it. Therefore, they would probably put him up on a popularity pedestal over the over Patrick Lynch. But that's surprising because you and I both know the Reverend Al Sharpton has many enemies. I mean, he's made many, or at least he's made many enemies with a lot of people out there. We talked a couple weeks ago about how he was in the business of shaking down companies, accusing them of being racist, whether true or not, in order to shake money out of them. And so, you know, I'm sure he doesn't have his supporters out there. And something tells me they probably weren't involved in the voting process either.
Reverend Al Shakedown. I mean, sorry, Sharpton.
Yes, yeah, you said it right.
They did have, there was an article, there's another article about that I just breezed past where they had a picture of Reverend Al Sharpton and they had every corporate logo in circulation, you know, in the background behind him, saying that these are the people who he's shook down, made threats, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know. I guess anything is possible, Lamont, but I just don't see the Reverend Al, you know, going there. I just don't. I don't know. Maybe I'm just hope springs eternal for me, but I just don't see the Reverend Al going, you know, going there and shaking people down. I don't know. I mean, you, Bob, you, I'm sure
right.
you can believe it, but I don't know. I just have a problem with that. I don't know. I'm not sure. Yes, but. But PBA President Pat Lynch loses the popularity poll between himself and Reverend Al Sharpton. I thought that was telling. Yeah, I thought that was very telling. And you're probably right, Lamont, that that there are folks who do have a problem with the police officers turning their backs on the mayor and officers being offered waivers, asking that the mayor not attend their funerals and stuff. And I do think that's a little... I think that's that's way outside of the lines. I think that it doesn't help any the situation. And it was a time where, especially with all that was going on, and the emotional situation the city was in, I just thought that was a very, very bad taste that PBA President Pat Lynch would pull these type of stunts. In the back of my mayor. So,
right.
Yeah, it was a time where they needed some healing, for lack of a better word. If I would tell you,
yeah.
We'll come right back and we'll do our last segment right here. It's the Ron Kelly Show with the Unflappable One, Lamont Gates, and we are on Blog Talk Radio. Is that where we are? Yeah, we're on Blog Talk Radio. That's my time.
The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com and on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show.
Yes, indeed, it's the Ron Kelly Show with Lamont Gates. It's 20 minutes before the hour, Sunday morning. Great, cloudy, freezing rain out there, from what I understand. I haven't been out there yet, Lamont, and don't intend to anytime soon, but I hear it's
right.
a little treacherous out there on the roads this morning. All right, here we go. Conspiracy theories on the French. Let me just say this, Lamont. I thought it was pretty laughable, and I had to agree with the Fox News. Fox News naysayers, when they pulled it out that I saw James, the guitarist, who wrote the song "You Got a Friend." I can't think of his name right now, but mine escapes me at the moment. But I saw a shot of him with Secretary of State Kerry. And
right.
Secretary of State Kerry was on the stage, and the man was playing the song "You Got a Friend," and I'm like, "What is this? What is this?" And from the beginning, Lamont, folks were talking because when they had the big rally, the first big rally they had in response to the Charlie Hebdo assassination that took place last week. Everybody knows about that. Charlie Hebdo assassinations at the their offices. When they had the big rally, you see everybody was there. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was there.
Right.
Angela Merkel from Germany was there. There were a lot of big wigs there, but nobody from America. Nobody from America. No big South Americans. I think they sent the ambassador to France. I mean, really, come on. And that I think that might have started the conspiracy theories, Lamont, about the United States having something to do with Charlie Hebdo.
Go ahead. I can guarantee you, even if the president himself had made the flight over there to Europe and was a part of that rally, conspiracy theories would still be flying about the CIA, FBI involvement, and that's exactly what I've been hearing. In fact, Ron Paul had made a statement claiming that he also believed that the U.S. was involved with the terrorist situation over there in the French. And I've heard two different types of conspiracy theories. One of them says that this was some sort of American hit because they are jealous of France's new independence or independent freedom or something of that nature. And I can't quite remember what the second conspiracy theory was, but it was definitely something aligned also with the CIA. But, I just want to say these things are just ridiculous. They're blown out of proportion, and conspiracy theorists are going to be just exactly who they are. Conspiracy theorists, even if, as I stated before, even if Obama was there at the rally over in Europe, they would still find a way to say that he purposely went over there to try to cover up the tracks that he laid for the CIA to go in there and set up this massacre, blaming it on Islam, when in fact the masked men were CIA agents or something silly to that nature. As you may know, or may or may not know, Ron Paul, who unsuccessfully tried to run for president at least two or three times, is a big conspiracy theorist himself. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people do not want to listen or even considering him for a run for president, because of the wacky theories he comes out with. Now, here's my question for these conspiracy theorists, okay? If the CIA is responsible for all the things that are happening in the world and there is absolutely no such thing as terrorism, are you telling me then that there is no such thing as evil, there's no such thing as bad people, that people are all good, not just basically good, but people are all good and there's nothing that happens that occurs out of their own hearts that allows them to decide to do something of evil? It's just all a setup by the CIA. Do we really want to go down that naive path? You know, so I think with the age of the internet, and this is what I said before concerning when the rabbi was on and the adulterous governmental tapes being released to the public and sometime in the future concerning Dr. King and other women, you want to believe, you want to be optimistic that they will focus on history. But with the age of the information, with all the nonsense that's floating on the internet, you know, people can easily be distracted from what is the truth and what is important to what is rather more salacious and what is not truth, what just sounds more entertaining to them. And that's my problem with all these so-called armchair experts, is that many of the articles they're reading are written by some whack job in his basement.
And the other thing, too, about there are people out there who just, you know, believe that the United States is responsible for every, you know, we're responsible for everything that goes on anywhere. We got our fingers at all everybody's cookie jar. And there are people who just believe that. Just, you know, they just believe anything you tell them. And you're right, that there are people who are just out there who are just, what value, you know, what, one thing about the United States is, the United States doesn't do anything that does not benefit them. That's a well-known fact. The United States does not do anything that doesn't benefit them. So what would rating the officers of the magazine and killing everybody in there, what benefit would that have? Why would we be jealous of France? France is what?
Go
ahead, Lauren.
No, go ahead. Finish your statement. Go ahead.
France is about the size of the state of New York. I mean, why would we be jealous of France? For what?
Well, it's silly. You're raising some great questions here. Going back to why would we raid a magazine and have people executed, including a police officer on front streets, it's pure nonsense. Now, if you want to talk about a conspiracy, I mean, I don't know if I would call it a conspiracy. I would call it greed. I would actually put more blame on the actual magazine company rather than any government official. I mean, from what I did read something about the magazine company going bankrupt. I don't know how true that was. And so they needed to stabilize that company by putting something as controversial out as a drawing of Muhammad. And what draws more attention than a drawing of Muhammad? You're going to get, you know, radicals either threatening you or going in there and doing exactly what they did. I mean, this company was firebombed in the past. You know, why would they then go out on the ledge and draw another picture? So to me, the bankruptcy hypothesis sounds a bit more accurate than the U.S. Sending in people out of jealousy over France. You know, people do things when it comes to money and greed. People do some extreme things to save their business or to save the money that's going in their pocket. And I believe that Charlie Hebdo had more reasonable explanation to stir up controversy way more than any government official coming in there and doing it out of jealousy for a country, especially a country like ours, the United States of America.
And I would believe that before I believe some crazy notion that the United States had anything to do with it. Because, look, Charlie Hebdo, the circulation of the magazine was 30,000 before this thing happened. They sold,
right.
and they've sold 3 million copies since.
Precisely.
So I think the bankruptcy issue is over, Lamont. If you're going from a publication that went from 30,000 total circulation to 3 million copies, so I think that solves that issue. So I'd be more inclined to believe that they hatched this plot to get shot. I mean, I know it sounds as ridiculous as a United States hatching a plot to go in there and cause harm. But I will believe that craziness, that sounds a little more believable than to believe that the United States had something to do with it.
And it's not like they intended for people to get shot. I think their ultimate intention was to just stir controversy because, the backlash of drawing a picture of the Prophet Muhammad, that also makes news all the way over here in the United States. We're interested now and seeing who this magazine company is, and, they had the gall to do this. Who are these people? So now their name is getting out there more, out of French lines, over to the United States, to people who probably never heard of the magazine. And the backlash of it was that they put people in danger. They didn't want people to die, but that's what happened. You called for the goose, and the geese came, But you also profited off of that, as you stated before, moving their circulation up to 3 million. And I believe I read somewhere that copies were selling for $500 to $600 on the internet or something like that. It's amazing what you can do when you stir up some controversy. And you can't tell me they didn't know they were stirring up controversy because, as I stated priorly, they were firebombed originally in the past for drawing a picture of the Prophet Muhammad, so they knew exactly what they were getting themselves involved in. Why would they bring that danger to their doorstep again? It had to be monetary reasons.
Yeah, because I don't think that, of course, I don't think that they, I agree with you 100%, I don't think that they had intended for somebody to come in there with submachine guns and blow the place up, but there was an element of stirring the pot. You know how Muslims and the radical element of Muslims, you know how they are, and you start messing with them, and the first thing they want to kill you. When you start talking about the Prophet Muhammad, that's a no-no. Look what happened with Salman Rushdie, the Satanic Verses. Where has he been for the last 20 years?
There was a cartoonist who was butchered in the middle of the street for drawing a picture of the Prophet Muhammad years ago. So they knew. They knew exactly what they were getting themselves into.
Yeah. I guess probably not to the extent of what actually happened, but they did know. And this notion in the United States had anything to do with that is absurd. But I would believe that, not that they intended to get killed, but I believe that there was a plot to get that circulation up, and it worked because I can't even say tripled. I don't know if it's even mathematically feasible to say what the increase was between 30,000 and 3 million. They 500%, 6,000, 2,000%.
Just massive money coming in.
Yeah. People ordering online and getting souvenir copies and hanging on their wall and all. And Jay Sweet, Charlie, etc.
But don't underestimate what people would do when they think they have a great monetary package coming in. I mean, if you can look at the situations here in America, we're seeing more stories of both wives and husbands killing each other off for insurance money. So don't for a magazine company to do this for financial gain is just not unbelievable whatsoever.
It sounds like a weird episode of Mad Men on AMC. Lamont, speaking of this, there was a press conference between British Prime Minister David Cameron and President Obama, and I'm just struck by the seemingly inept unpreparedness, however you want to put it, about President Obama. Lamont, you know, I'm a big Obama fan. You know, I'm a strong, staunch supporter of the president. But sometimes when he speaks publicly, I know he's the president of the United States, and he can't, you know, every word he says is going to be recorded or interpreted or misinterpreted, as it is for the most part. And it just strikes me as just being so overwhelmed sometimes when he speaks publicly. Now, I listen to President Obama, and I listen to David Cameron, who seemed much more, he was much more comfortable and much more, you know, aloof and just a total contrast to the president, who speaks in such halting, careful, you know. I don't know.
You're being critical of his oratory ability.
I'm being critical of President Obama. Yes. Now, well, I think if it's written down already, if it's on the teleprompter, you know, and they talked about the president. Mitt Romney in the last election talked about the president being a teleprompter baby or whatever like that. And, you know, I have to agree, Lamont. I just kind of cringe when you see what's going on. I just kind of cringe when I saw the president at this press conference the other day.
My personal critique of President Obama's oratory abilities and speech in public are, you tend to see him formulate a thought. Sometimes he can't get the thought fully out, and so he'll pause and then come back with the thought and continue it. But compare President Obama to President George W. Bush and those two speeches, you know, those two oratory abilities, and then come back and tell me which one you really think needs more shaping. You and I both know that and Mitt Romney, he can't really say anything about anyone being a teleprompter president. He was known as the gaffed-making presidential runner, you know, some of the silly things he would say that would come out of his mouth that apparently didn't take any consideration in thinking before he spoke. But, you know, I guess presidents can be critiqued on their oratory abilities and their verbal and vocal skills, but I think most importantly they need to be critiqued on their policies. And you know that, I don't have to tell you this, their policies and their intentions for the nation that they're running. Surely, if you went on YouTube and listened to, going back to the George W. Bush speeches, I mean, there are montages of just comedy-like speeches, back-to-back, spliced together of different speeches of President George W. Bush and all the errors he made, you know, verbally, that, you know, he could probably have went on the road with to do a comedy tour with. So, people will have their criticisms, and I can definitely see what you mean in comparison to David Cameron on the oratory abilities.
There's times, Lamont, when, especially in times of crisis, you want your president to be, there's times when you want your president to seem to be in command. You know, you want the president to sound like he's in command, especially during times like these. You know, God only knows what the next situation is going to be.
Right.
You want your president to be the sound. You want him to sound like he's in command, because when the president's in command, it makes you feel safe as well. And the president is just kind of,
Maybe what you could do is write a letter to the White House explaining your criticisms of the president's oratory abilities, and have everything written for him, and have a speechwriter have everything planned out a little better before he comes on television and begins a speech.
Yeah, invite him to come knocking on my door with the Secret Service. saying is, and I don't want my words misinterpreted, so I think I'll just stay back. I think the president should just do. I think he should just do more. But anyway, all right, everybody, thank you so much. Thank you, Lamont. This edition of the Lamont Kelly Show was produced by Lamont Gates. Thank you, Lamont. All right, everybody, we'll see you back here next week. Thank you again, and take care of yourselves and be well. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Take care, Lamont.